Republican Representative Tyler Clancy followed in his father's footsteps.
So if your last name is Clancy, you only have a couple options of what you can do. One of those is a police officer. My dad was a police officer for 27 years, and so it kind of ran in my veins.
The 27-year-old is the youngest representative on the Hill and the first in his family to become a lawmaker.
I have a distant relative who was a member of the Irish Parliament way back, but I think maybe in this side of the Atlantic.
And this legislative session, his two worlds of being a police officer and a lawmaker are colliding. That's because the Utah legislature is considering restricting the rights of public sector unions to collectively bargain. That would cover police unions too.
When I talk to my firefighters, my police officers that I work with, work closely with, we recognize that we want to see more power for workers, not less. We think that this curtails the power of workers.
Representative Clancy is one of the only members of the legislature who is in a union. He's a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. Clancy voted no on the original version of the bill, and he wasn't the only Republican to do so. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This week on State Street, we're breaking down the bill that would limit how public union employees can collectively negotiate for, well, everything at work. Plus, the latest twist in the legislative process, the new substitute version of it.
Okay, let's start with who this bill will impact. There are a lot of public employees that work for the state of Utah or local governments. Like, technically, we're public employees. Like you and me, right?
Yeah. KUER's broadcast license is held by the University of Utah. We technically work there. It's a public university. Bada bing, bada boom. We public.
Gotcha. But who does this really affect?
Well, not us, Sean. Because even though we put the public in public radio, we're not unionized. And the majority of public sector employees here in Utah are like us, not part of a union. The bill also does not impact private unions. This bill wouldn't touch people like the ski patrollers in Park City who went on strike over the holidays. And one last note, Utah is a right-to-work state.
Right. That means you don't have to join a union, even if you work in an industry that has one.
The people it would affect are unionized workers in the public sector. These are Utah's public school teachers, police officers, firefighters, and nurses who work at the University of Utah, just to name a few. And Sean, the big thing we need to define to understand what this bill will do is collective bargaining. Stick that phrase in your brain and don't forget it.
Got it. Collective bargaining. That's like if a group of 10 coworkers think they're underpaid and choose one to speak on their behalf during a negotiation with their boss, right?
I think that you're pretty close with that example. But I will add that a union leader, for example, advocates for better working conditions on behalf of the union members. So the union members vote on priorities like better wages or healthcare. Then those union reps meet with stakeholders who could be administrators, local governments, and even the legislature to try and get them on board with what the union wants. Here's how Representative Tyler Clancy, the cop, says this works in practice. He gave the example in respect to firefighters.
We know that it's not just fires that cause cancer for firefighters, which is the number one line of duty death cause for firefighters. From a city manager perspective, your role is to keep costs low. Your top priority isn't cancer coverage for firefighters because it's expensive and it's a difficult consideration. That's where the importance of labor leaders come into play, is where they can go and say, this is top level priority for us, and we are going to, on behalf of all of our firefighters, or 90% of them, we are going to advocate for that policy. That's really what I think is so important, is because it gives a seat at the table to those who traditionally may not be there.
It's worth noting that not all public sector unions participate in collective bargaining. Some school districts do it. Salt Lake City Police and Salt Lake City Fire also collectively bargain. But Clancy says this is a useful tool to have in the union tool belt. So get rid of it altogether. That's one less tool.
Okay, so I think I've got a good idea of collective bargaining, but I want to go back to this bill. What exactly does it mean for public unions and that collective bargaining?
For that, I want to bring on KUER education reporter Martha Harris. Martha Harris, thank you so much for joining State Street.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it's been a crazy few days up at the Utah legislature, but the original bill put forth by Republican Representative Jordan Tusher banned public sector unions from collective bargaining at all.
Yep.
That passed the House, but in true Utah legislative fashion, as the bill neared the finish line, a major change was introduced to the legislation. Explain to me what the bill does now.
Yeah, totally. And I guess just for some context, I mean, this bill, like you said, it passed through the House. It made a first pass through the Senate. It passed through the Senate committee and then a first pass on the Senate floor. And public labor unions were really mad. They've been mad for, I mean, the last few weeks and even before the bill was officially published. And so there was a lot of pushback and a lot of lawmakers were talking about, like, I've never gotten this many emails, phone calls from constituents being mad about this and I don't feel good about this. And even like in my personal life, I've never talked to so many people who are so familiar with the bill that the Utah legislature is working on. Mm-hmm. So very contentious, lots of people upset. So at the last minute, before they were about to go to the final vote on the Senate floor, the Senate sponsor, Senator Kirk Collamore, he published a substitute version Friday morning. And what this would do is it would still allow collective bargaining if public labor unions, they polled all employees, not just union members, and 50% of them plus one employee, so more than 50%, said, yes, we want union representation, we want collective bargaining. So that's the substitute version that's been proposed. It hasn't been voted on yet, but that's what they're moving towards.
Okay, so just to make sure that we get this right, the original bill essentially said, or did say, not essentially said, it absolutely did say no collective bargaining within the public sector, period.
Yeah.
But now it's saying, oh, yes, we'll allow collective bargaining, but only if 50% or 50% plus one of everybody in, let's say, your school say we want these issues to be addressed.
Yeah. And to be clear, they call it the employee class. So like for a school district, it wouldn't be all school district employees. It would be 50% of teachers, specifically if we're talking about like a teacher's contract. But yeah, that's a change. So now it's not an all out ban on collective bargaining. There's this pathway if you meet this threshold.
This bill has gravely upset public sector unions, particularly teachers. So why are unions not necessarily happy with this piece of legislation?
Yeah, I think there's a couple answers to that. And maybe just first start with teachers. What I'm hearing from specifically educators and also some union members is they feel that lawmakers are running this as retaliation against the Utah Education Association. That's the state's largest teachers union. I mean, it's no secret that the UEA, Utah Education Association, they are not on board. They're not happy with some things that lawmakers has done recently. I mean, they have sued the state over the state's newest and largest voucher program, the Utah Fits All Scholarship. They also challenged in court the proposed Amendment A. They got that voided from the ballot. So some people believe that this is retaliation on the UEA. So that's one reason why they're upset. But as far as the actual impacts of the bill, especially with the original bill, they felt like this was taking away their voice. They said that this gives us a collective voice at the table. We have more power when we come to our employer as a collective unit. You know, our union helps us in times of need. We don't want you to weaken our unions, basically make them ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the idea that more voices is better than one voice.
Yeah, like, you know, it's hard to go to your employer and be like, I as an individual want this thing. But if you're saying I represent all of these employees and here's what we want, you're coming with more power.
I've been reporting on the legislature for about 3 years now and spent many hours up at the Utah Capitol. And I have never seen so many cops in uniform, mm-hmm. so many firefighters yeah. in uniforms, and people really proudly wearing pins yeah. that say they're a part of some kind of union. They were really upset, mm-hmm. as you've already mentioned, and they came out. They showed up
yeah,
to make their voices heard.
I will say even this morning, just to add, this morning I was outside the Senate gallery with about 200, 300 union members there waiting to hear about the bill. We were packed into this hallway. I was really sweaty. And they started singing this song together. They were saying, "Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong." And they were all singing together. We have public works employees, we have firefighters, we have cops, and we have teachers, and they're all together fighting for this.
So how are they feeling about the new changes now?
I mean, it's very early, so it's kind of hard to say. Even when I was in that hallway, the substitute version had just been published online. People were reading about it on their phones. I was like, "Hey, how do you feel about this?" And they're like, "I don't even know what this is yet."
Yeah, no comment.
Exactly. So I checked in with them after. I did talk with the president of the Professional Firefighters of Utah. He said, "You know, we feel neutral about this substitute. We're okay with it. We can live with it." As far as the Utah Education Association, they said they are going to take the weekend to review it. But as of right now, they don't have an official position. Even though they don't have a position on the substitute, they are happy. They're celebrating that at least the pressure that they put on lawmakers is moving the needle a little bit. I don't know how they're going to end up feeling about it, but they're happy that there's some change.
So let's kind of zoom out a little bit. Where do Utah's actions fit in nationally?
There's a wide range of laws on collective bargaining. Like in some states, if a union wants to collectively bargain, then the employer has to come to the table. And those are usually seen as really pro-union. Utah is not the most, already was not the most pro-union state with its laws. But there have been several other states where they have banned collective bargaining. Some of them have had carve-outs for firefighters and police. Some of them are just, you know, all out ban on collective bargaining. So there are other states that have done this. And then there's also other states that have required what they call recertification. So kind of that vote to keep the union around. They require that every year or every 5 years. With Utah substitute, it would require that vote every 5 years. And that's just kind of putting another hurdle in front of unions to get towards collective bargaining. When I was talking with experts about this, another thing I also heard is this has typically been proposed at a time when a state has a budget problem, and this is sometimes used as a way to deal with that budget problem.
All right. KUER education reporter Martha Harris, thank you for giving us the lowdown on this pretty complex bill that impacts a good working force of Utah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I'm going to go take a nap.
Good.
That was KUER education reporter Martha Harris.
And an update on where this bill is at in the legislative process. The Senate introduced the change that allows some collective bargaining Friday. Then the Senate sponsor, Republican Kirk Collamore, motioned to circle the bill. That means he put the bill on hold. No debate, no vote, just limbo until he motions to uncircle it. He said the reason it's on pause is so people could look over the new version. If the new bill makes its way out of the Senate, it'll go back to the House for another vote.
Ah, you just gotta love that legislative process. When we come back, we'll hear from the bill's architect and why a lot of people just really don't like it. You're listening to State Street.
Every weekday, KUER brings you fresh coverage of local stories breaking and developing across Utah. Utah News Now is a podcast that publishes twice a day, Monday through Friday. It has all the latest headlines and stories from KUER's newsroom. Find the latest episode of Utah News Now at KUER.org or wherever you download and listen to podcasts.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So we've got a good sense now about what this bill is trying to accomplish, but I'm curious why lawmakers felt this change was necessary in the first place.
Well, I spoke with bill sponsor Republican Representative Jordan Tusher about it. I asked him what problem he believes this bill is solving. How he views collective bargaining is kind of the opposite of how Clancy sees it.
We have a number of employees across the state that just aren't represented in that process. And especially in the situations where you have a collective bargaining agreement where they're the sole collective bargaining agent, the union on one side of the table, the employers on the other, and that collective bargaining agent doesn't even represent a majority of the employees. And so you have a majority of employees whose voice really isn't at the table. And in those cases, what you see is, not to say that the union isn't looking after employees, but they represent a certain type of employee.
Unions have fiercely refuted this claim, to which Tusher responded with,
unions have a monopoly in these collective bargaining agreements. So I can imagine why they're upset, right? They have more power in that than the average employee across the board.
Unions also disagree with that, for the record. I think it's worth mentioning that Tusher is not a public sector union member. He is an attorney employed by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
So instead of collective bargaining being more representative and fair, Tusher thinks it's less. Is this kind of like when two people look at the same glass of Diet Coke and one person may see it as half empty and the other is like, that Diet Coke glass is half full?
And I will always pick a half full Diet Coke. Overall, I would say that's correct, Sean. They're looking at the same scenario and seeing different things. Tusher gave me an example of how he thinks some voices can be left out of the conversation.
In some cases, it may be that the union members tend to be older, you know, they're going to care about, you know, how do I continue to get pay raises in my 20th, 25th, 30th year of employment? How do I ensure that I have a great retirement and I stay on that? Where your younger employees might be caring about, well, what's the starting wage? How do I get maternity benefits? How do I get more time off so I can spend with my young family? And those voices just aren't being heard.
Okay, I get it. Tusher thinks collective bargaining only benefits those who agree with the priorities set by union members.
Nailed it.
If you aren't on board, you're just left behind.
Yes.
Are there other ways besides collective bargaining for union members to address workplace concerns? As I've always understood it, unions are there to, you know, collectively bargain.
I think that makes great sense, and I think it's a great question. There is some debate around this, though. Tusher is very adamant that this bill does not kill union organizing. He says unions can still speak with employers. That's called meet and confer, when union members meet with management, but nothing is legally binding. And union employees are more than welcome and actually encouraged to take up the issues directly with the big boss. You don't need a union rep in the room. Advocate for yourself.
Love it when people stand up for themselves. But I can't imagine everyone is on board with those options.
You imagined correctly. This bill sparked a ton of outrage among union members. Hundreds of people flooded committee rooms to have their voices heard on the issue.
Please vote no on this bill.
And I am against this House bill.
Vote no.
We're against this bill.
Vote no on this one.
I'm urging you to vote no on this bill.
I oppose this bill.
This bill is un-American.
There were not many members of the public present who supported the bill. I'll say the committee hearings got pretty combative at times. There was this one point where a law enforcement officer states that collective bargaining helps advocate for greater safety on the job. Republican Senator Brady Brammer tried to push back on that. He made the assertion that states without collective bargaining, like North Carolina, aren't any less safe.
I don't know that the claim that unions are the panacea and the, you know, the Lorax of safety, you know, is necessarily accurate. And so, yeah.
Was there a question? Because I was going to say anecdotally from my experience in 35 years.
Have you served in North Carolina?
No, just you.
Okay. Then you don't have an anecdote from North Carolina.
I am an FBI Academy graduate, and I will tell you that I've interacted with law enforcement all over this country and all over this world for the last 20 years because of that association.
Hmm. Sounds like a bit of a he said situation.
Sure was. And like Martha said, when the Senate spoke about the bill again on Friday, union members were literally banging on the Senate doors to get in and singing.
So, can I ask you a blunt question?
Anytime.
What are we supposed to take away from all of this?
I think these are the big points, Sean. About 15% of Utahns work in the public sector. Two of the three biggest employers in the state are the University of Utah and the state of Utah itself. While not all of them participate in collective bargaining, this bill makes it harder to use that tool in the union tool belt. Opponents of the bill also argue that these public sectors are already struggling to maintain adequate staff. Think teacher shortages or the enrollment in the police academy tanking. So if they don't have these tools available to advocate for themselves, they just won't join the profession, or people will leave the profession. I'll add, union members know the process isn't perfect, but they would rather have the option than not.
Beyond the bill itself, all of this back and forth reminds me a lot of how the Utah legislature has been asserting its power over the last several years, even though the people it would affect were largely against the bill, and said so loudly. We saw this with Amendment D last election, when the legislature wanted to give itself more power over ballot initiatives. Members of the public accused the legislature of acting like lawmakers alone know what's best for everyone.
I will say, some lawmakers have pointed out that the changes being made in real time mean the legislative process is working. They wrote a bill, are listening to feedback, and are making relevant changes. But let's end where we started, with Republican Representative Tyler Clancy. He opposed the first version, but says he's been working with the bill sponsors and union members on key revisions.
Just as conservatives, we recognize there needs to be a check on government power. There also needs to be a check on consolidation of private power as well, and making sure that working families have ability to bargain for better health insurance, better wages, and better on-the-job treatment across the board.
That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. Don't forget about our State Street newsletter. We round up what's happening at the legislature each week with insights, links, and more. Think of it like a podcast appetizer. You can find a sign up at our website.
This whole podcast is not possible without our gracious team. Our digital crew is Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark are responsible for editing and audio production here at State Street.
And Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
See you next week. Sage, we're rolling. Your mic is hot.
Okay. H-O-T-T-O-G-O. My mic is so hot to go.
From KUER.